Welcome to Unwired, a podcast where we talk about all things technical, all things computer-based, and including a couple of things that aren't computer-based. But in this case, I'm joined with a guest, and we're going to be talking about computer security again. Every time I have this guest on, we sort of focus on computer-based things, and we usually delve into security because that's what he's doing. Welcome, Andrew.
Welcome, Robert. Thank you for having me.
So something happened recently. It was multifold. In fact, I'm going to give credit to the Register. Is it .com or .uk? It's the Register.uk, right?
UK. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
.co.uk.
.co.uk, right. They're a news...
They're an independent media.
Right.
They focus on tech news.
Right. They're sort of tongue-in-cheek. They're very humorous, but they mm-hmm. do cover real news. So... Mm-hmm.
It would be what Monty Python decided to do is tech news on the side.
So... they focused some attention. They covered a particular company, but they covered something threefold. Now, one mm-hmm. of those things was very humorous. It turned out to be such a flawed argument. And then one of those things turned out to be serious. So we're going to cover that today.
Okay.
Especially because it's a company that we've actually done quite a bit of work with, their technology. You more than me, but we've done quite a bit of work with their technology. So can you give us sort of a background on what happened?
So which of the ones you want, the vulnerability situation?
Yeah, let's start out with the eye-catching comments that turned out to be the headline comments that turned out to be so out of whack that it caused a humorous response by a majority of people. And then we can tackle the actual real vulnerability that's significant.
Right. So there was an article that had been presented where people were talking about the theoretical issues with toothbrushes that can be connected to smartphones and whatever to track usage and different kinds of things like that. And one of the concerns that we have had as security practitioners over the past decade is that IoT, Internet of Things, devices that are, you know, your smart fridge, smart TV, smart whatever, that these devices that are connected to the internet to get some useful functionality, allegedly, they can be subverted and have been subverted. Many of them have been subverted to use in denial of service attacks against networks, right? Because not a lot of effort is put into them in terms of security, et cetera. So there was an article that suggested that a particular smart toothbrush had that vulnerability. And people ran with it because, you know, that's something that goes viral quickly. But the truth of the matter was, it was just a discussion about the theoretical possibility of such a device being used for network attacks. And a whole set of people came out and said, oh no, it wouldn't even work that way. And another group of people came out and refuted the arguments about why it was a problem until finally somebody said, but this wasn't an article about an actual vulnerability. It was discussing the theoretical problems with the technology and the way that it was implemented.
Yes, but one of the flaws in the argument, to dive deep into it, is that the toothbrush itself wasn't on the internet. So the way the article presented right. itself is as if you could hack the toothbrush and then use it as a denial of service attack.
Right.
But in truth, the technology uses Bluetooth to attach to your phone.
Correct.
And so in and of itself, you could hack it with bad software uploaded as an app, but your toothbrush is not going to be able to do any denial of service attack on its own.
That's right. It's feasible. it's similar to your smartphone, right? Let's say that you have a Fitbit or a similar type of health fitness device. Most of those devices do not have direct network connectivity. Some of them do, the ones that play music and some other things, but many of them do not. They tether to your device, and by way of the app, they inadvertently have internet access, but they don't have a defined IP address on the network. And so the type of threat, this is what we call threat modeling, by the way, where you evaluate the risks of a technology, software, hardware, et cetera, and understand how it could be attacked, what risk profile it has, what surface area it has. You couldn't attack that device directly. You would have to attack that device by way of Android and iOS apps that subvert that app and then leverage that device to do something else. Now, a sophisticated actor, right, what we commonly refer to as a nation state actor, could conceivably daisy chain that to something else. For instance, if you have Bluetooth phone and headset, wireless phone and headset, also not connected to the internet, but someone is able to jump through this app, jump to that device because of a weakness of that device, get to some other Bluetooth app, those kinds of things are possible. They are not common. They are not impossible, right? So I just want to be clear about that. These are not everyday things. These are things that require a ton of resources to investigate and probe and do. You find them in very specialized cases where a particular nation state is attempting to subvert another one. For instance, Russia-Ukraine scenario, you would see that in the Middle East scenarios, US versus China, North Korea versus US. Those are the class of places where you would see that kind of attack, to the extent that it was a legitimate one. I'm just speaking completely hypothetically here. I'm not trying to start a new viral rumor about what is actually possible.
So this is different from devices that are directly over your, connected to your internet over Wi-Fi or through cabling, like televisions or refrigerators or even coffee machines. Why you need a coffee machine connected to your internet is beyond me. I'm still of the mindset that these over the air, and we're discovering this with cars now, these over the air updates, while when there's big security issues, these updates are useful. But oftentimes the companies, their updates quite often take away features as opposed to giving you new ones. Quite often, not always, and not all companies. But I've never connected my televisions to the internet.
In fact, I'll go further, but to say I have actively prevented my television from connecting to the internet.
Yeah, it's just not. In fact, earlier models were found to be sending data. And in fact, cars now, they're sending telemetry data. They're sending how you drive, where you drive, the conditions under which you drive, your paths, your constant stops and starts. They're sending all that information back to the companies. Now, you may think I might be paranoid. I'm not paranoid. These are proven facts that these, and it has been recently adjudicated in court that the companies have a right to do this.
There's a legitimate function, right? Like, I think that this is important to understand. 15, 20 years ago, if people are crying of the way the technology is going, you would call them a Luddite and you'd say they're afraid of technology. But there are actual threats today, and the threats come under a benign heading. They come with potential value. A car company that is presenting a car that can automatically handle a series of functions, it is actually valuable to them and indirectly to their consumers for them to gather telemetry data. to understand what is happening, what is normal, how often does this problem occur? When something does occur, were there things leading up to it? Right? There's, as a networking professional, cybersecurity professional, there's nothing more frustrating than having a problem manifest itself today and you realize that the logs that would help you answer the question of what happened were not turned on.
Yes, right? there is an altruistic, there is a technological benefit to having that information. The problem is this information doesn't stay with the IT. If this information stayed with IT, and even then there's issues.
Right, so it doesn't stay within IT, you're correct, and it doesn't stay within the org. See, once information is available to a company, it can be subpoenaed.
And sold,
right. So organizations can sell your driving patterns to insurance companies and to other people who will advertise to you. So that's one side of it. And even if there's legislation that finally, eventually comes into play to tamp down on that. I say tamp down because in the U.S., that's as best you're going to get. In Europe, they'll probably lock it down. But in the U.S., in the land of free capitalism, they'll tamp down eventually.
Yeah, they may. Go on.
The problem remains that it can be subpoenaed. And again, that always sounds good in the beginning, right? What if someone's carjacked you and now you need that data to find out where? Sure, there are a number of use cases, just like the use case of the telemetry, where this stuff would come into play. But there are plenty of use cases where abuse would come into play. As soon as somebody doesn't like a certain class of people, if those class of people have that vehicle, that's a problem. Additionally, right, because we've all been speaking about legitimate or semi-legitimate transfer of data, right? Data coming back to the vendor for telemetry purposes, being sold to third parties for profit purposes, being subpoenaed by the government for legal and regulatory purposes. But what happens to improperly secure data that is stolen by hackers?
That's the problem. As soon as these vehicles come out with this ability to send their data back, they become targets of hacking. And we all know that security is expensive. Doing things properly from the coding all the way up to the transmission of data is expensive. So quite often when shortcuts are taken or you're trying to reduce the cost of something, where do those cuts take place? With security.
Well, of course, they take care. I would even say, besides them taking place in the security realm, one, I would expand costs to include time, right? So it's not always just an expense, but it's time that you have to go and test these things, et cetera, and so on. Companies, even on occasions where it costs less to implement specific security because it's just so baseline, companies will cut those corners to save time where they don't have to recheck things and revisit things. That's the thing that's most frustrating to me. If it was a matter of people gambling on a $100 part versus a $27 part and saying, we'll see. And then 4 months down the road, you realize that, okay, that breach was because you saved $73 per component. That would be one thing. But when it's 50 cents versus 25 cents, or when it's a wash on cost, because over time, if you bought more of it, it would have gone down in price anyway. When your security is breached because people refuse to take the time and spend the money, any money, that's frustrating.
Yeah.
Especially when they're getting more money selling your data on the side anyway from one of the other avenues we spoke about.
So part of the problem is not just security and how, or I should say data and how it's used. Part of the issue is with vulnerabilities built in that weren't vulnerabilities at a time, but they become vulnerabilities as the rest of technology matures. So that moves us to the second part of this article from the register.co.uk, where it talked about SSL breach. And I've seen the attacks on my own network. Mm-hmm. Can you explain some of that a bit more?
Okay. So this one is dealing with a particular vendor and their SSL VPN technology. Now, SSL VPN is a common way in which end users have remote access into their offices. Okay. It's similarly used with even personal VPN. Some personal VPN technology uses SSL VPN. Sometimes they use OpenVPN or they use IPsec VPN. It all depends, right? The different VPN technologies have different advantages in speed and ease of use. SSL VPN is an ease of use scenario.
Right.
Yeah. IPsec VPN tends to be faster because it's accelerated in a different way, and it tends to be more secure because it was built for that specific purpose, not retrofitted for a purpose. But it's harder to configure. And you know what's going to happen when you have two technologies, essentially the same cost, one is harder to configure. That one is the one that doesn't get used as much. And so SSL VPN over the years has had more implementation breaches, meaning the technology itself makes sense, but because it is a Frankenstein monster put together after the fact to accomplish something that wasn't originally designed that way, there's all sorts of implementation issues where the way in which you do something leads you to have problems with vulnerabilities. And the vendor had one such issue over the past week where they had to quickly roll out multiple versions of their product to cover a whole slew of their equipment because it was a high severity vulnerability. And here's what you really don't want to hear with a vulnerability or with a remote execution vulnerability. You don't want to hear the phrase unauthenticated, because what it means, if a vulnerability exists in your product or solution or service and it is unauthenticated, it means that this is before you enter username and password and multi-factor.
So before you can even check the authenticity of a person.
Correct.
That the vulnerability exists.
Right. So they can get it before the login. It's a pre-login access, which makes other things difficult too. If it's a vulnerability that comes after authentication, it is easy to see after the fact if you were breached. Right? You look for some bogus authentication, a slew of them, and you find, okay, at 2 a.m. I see there were 27 login attacks and it looks like one of them made it in. They were in for 10 minutes. Then our alarms went off and we were able to block them. But a pre-authentication attack, will that even get logged? Is it going to pass through a functionality path that includes logging?
Mm.
Maybe not. Maybe not. And so that is the worst kind of breach, because anyone can do it from anywhere. And it may hit some of the restrictions, right? There, especially with a firewall product, there are probably places where you're able to say, oh, I only want access from this place or from that place. But for people who are relying on, well, I've got multi-factor, I've got two-factor authentication, and that's the only layer they put, this vulnerability would smoke them, right? This is why we say that cybersecurity is all about defense in depth, multiple layers, control who, what, where, when, control as many of those things as possible, because that would leave your device vulnerable for a more narrow window than other people in other places.
All right, that's very good to know. So in terms of this, is there a strategy that you can deploy early, because one of the things you mentioned is that once you have to start to do multiple things, you're getting into that complexity level that had you using SSL security in the first place. So you're using SSL because it's simpler to use, faster to get set up. If it now becomes more complex, does that mean you're less likely to do it, or you're less likely to do it properly?
That's a good question. But here's the thing. I would argue that if everybody decided to ditch SSL VPN tomorrow and picked up IPsec VPN with all of its complexity of setup and all of its difficulty of connecting from behind hotels and other strange networks, even if they did those things, they should still do the other things we're discussing to narrow down their surface window, their surface area, right?
Right.
Meaning restrict where people can log in from. If you only have people logging in from the United States in your company, then don't allow the whole planet to connect to your VPN. If you only allow VPN after hours for some strange reason, then only set the VPN to be enabled during those hours. If you, right, do the various things that will control. If you want to limit it by certificates in addition to username, password, and multi-factor, do those kinds of things to control how your device is accessed, because no matter what technology you use, you'll be in a better place. Right? Because the number of things someone will have to do to hit you, if someone is scanning your network and they're scanning from a network that you don't even allow, they're scanning from a foreign country, then they'll bypass your network and move on their way, even though your network would otherwise be vulnerable to people in the U.S., right? You've narrowed the number of people that can hit your network.
Got it.
So defense in depth is always important. Complexity, try to avoid any complexity that is not necessary, right? Complexity just because is not good. But if you're using a secure tool that happens to be a little bit more complex to set up than some other tool, that's just it. That's its baseline. Simplify it as much as it can be simplified, but use it because it's safer. That's the approach that should be taken. But don't just do things that are complex for no reason, because I guarantee you, if you have a 19-step process to log into your environment, you have 19 places that could be vulnerable that you would have to keep an eye on to make sure that they don't have weaknesses.
Got it. All right. That sounds good. I think we've come to, so as a recap, mm-hmm. we understand that Internet of Things, you still have to be careful of, you know.
Yeah.
We really shouldn't be so quick, as soon as we get something new, to slam it into our network without knowing how often the company does updates, how they do updates, and how you'd get alerts on their updates.
Yep.
There's also, when it comes time for even your networking devices, like I have a particular way that I do installs when I'm doing AV installs, and especially now that everything is so network connected. If I don't have access to the host's networking, or they don't have someone who really manages their networking, I don't use DHCP. One, I like my equipment to always come up with the same IP addressing. I can tell you about one church that I deal with where if you don't turn things on the same in the right order, you don't know where their equipment is. You don't know what IP address the equipment's going to get. Now, it really shouldn't work that way. DHCP is usually robust, but there seems to be some pieces of equipment that vie for attention, and so they'll try to just pick up the first IP address that they see. So their implementation of DHCP is poor. So one of the things that I want to do is make sure that all the time the computer comes up, it comes up with a particular IP address. So I'll normally use an inside address. doesn't matter what it is, as long as I'm consistent with it for that environment. You know, the 192, 168, I'm never on zero or one. I put it somewhere else. But then I keep them, my equipment's grouped together. Cameras usually go in a certain block, camera controllers mm-hmm. in a certain block, audio devices in another block. But I've had one gentleman say to me that that makes things more vulnerable, that they should be attached to the router in some way. He's a young gentleman. I don't think he fully understands how networking works yet. But he's, you know, I intend to have a discussion with him and explain to him why what he said is actually very much backwards. But it's the idea that, I mean, if I don't put a gateway into these devices, they're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
So,
and they won't even be seen properly from the outside right. because of the way they would respond. Right.
And if they're on a if they're on a network block that's not approachable by the guest network, because many mm-hmm. people, when they set up devices in their churches or their small businesses, they never turn on guest Wi-Fi. So any Wi-Fi people who come in to use their systems, or, you know, they're just in the waiting room browsing or whatever, you don't realize that they have access to your entire network. They may not know where all devices are, but one smart person can just start scanning and see where things are. So in that area, we have to also be careful when we get new devices, how they're plugged in, and what we can get them to do. So that's the recap for today. I double clutched my outro music. I'm gonna have to rearrange my desk. I have this device way on the wrong side. So, listen, Andrew, thank you for joining today. Continue to check out Unwired and listen out for our next episode. Thank you.